Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
This is the World Cup on Caught Offside.
Ronaldo! Oh, it's come on, God! Ronaldo! Brazil in front! It's Ronaldo!
And Donovan has scored! Oh, can you believe this? Go, go, USA!
Aimed in for Kurtz!
And Germany are the champions of the world.
It's Mbappe! Oh, my
word! Now, here are your hosts, Andrew and JJ.
Oh, yes! Caught Offside from just outside of New York City and from an apartment in Brooklyn, New York. Andrew Gundling, JJ Devaney, winding down a World Cup weekend. What's up, brother?
Everything's up, Andrew. A lot happened today, a lot happened yesterday, and we're going to try and parse through as much of it as we can.
Can I just say that I just love the hell out of this thing. I don't care. They could have nil-nils at the half for the rest of time. I don't care if another goal is scored in the entire tournament. I hope this never ends. I hope that some Arsene Wenger comes in with some FIFA stipulation midway through the tournament and we're playing this thing up through February. I just love it. I can't get enough of it.
Today I was lying on the couch watching Canada and Croatia, and I got that feeling that I knew I'd get eventually. And it was a feeling that I had when I was a kid watching it. This is bloody brilliant. This is great. I'm enjoying every little aspect of the games. And I even enjoy the fact that my friends, who are my non-soccer friends, even want to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And want to watch games. It's fantastic. And they rounded off the game with a truly fascinating one in Spain and Germany. And just, it's so compelling. It's so interesting. The final day, as you can see across many of the groups, is going to be thoroughly, thoroughly interesting. We can take some trends from this world.
Only one nation has qualified so far for the round of 16 heading into the final day.
Yeah. I mean, even France with their attacking flair, they're still question marks. They're not perfect either. And then you've got Brazil and their injury issues, and they've yet to play, and there's just so much going on. It's it's really, really great. And then there's even some equally compelling stories, which we will get to at the end of the podcast, that exist outside of the white lines of the field. But even, I mean, it's all World Cup all the time, and this is the genius of the World Cup, and it's the genius of maybe the stubbornness and the pig-headedness of FIFA. They're like, listen, just go ahead with it, because once we get them into the second round of group games, all these people are hooked.
It is true, though. It's so true, man. Like, despite their best efforts, we're going to love this thing, you know? Like as hard as FIFA may try to, like, ruin this in many ways inadvertently, we can't help but love it. It's just, you're right, once the games start, and the other thing you mentioned, too, with, like, the off-the-field stuff, look, I know some of it is ugly,
It's very interesting.
But the drama, but it just builds drama. And it pushes storylines from one match to the next, and it gets you sucked in. And you're right, too, about like people in my life that are not soccer people. So many of them I found to be as in on this tournament as any that I can remember. Like, my family is paying attention to this in a way that I've never seen before. It's fascinating.
It's good for you because they have so little interest in your life that at least they are interested in one aspect of your life.
Yeah, we're really bonding over this. It's been really, really nice.
It's great. Look, it's great. And, you know, even I called my dad yesterday and he was so pumped to see how Messi would do against Mexico. And So for the England-USA game, I watched it here because in my apartment, I really wanted to lock in. And I do feel that at a bar, sometimes you miss little nuances and pieces because there might be someone in your ear or there's noise.
You just watch it differently. Yeah,
but I had to go to a bar for Argentina-Mexico, which is probably the first game we'll start with. And atmosphere-wise, just amazing. Of course, I wandered in wearing a Boca Juniors top. Not really thinking it through. And it was a bar full of my Mexican neighbors, just like wall to wall. Even one guy in a Jorge Campos 1994 jersey, which I had so much respect for. And there was a small pocket of Argentinian supporters in there, which I kind of gravitated towards because I was wearing an Argentina top. But
was it like a record scratch moment when you walked in?
Oh, I looked around and I was like, ugh. But I had my top zipped up, but it was very warm in there. So I knew my tracky top would have to come off and I would reveal. And it was so weird because afterwards, the Mexican fans, they were in no way embittered. They completely took their beating and I got fist bumps from them. And they said, you know, they were glad that Messi had scored. You know, one guy said, if someone's going to score, I'm glad it was him. But it sucks that we lost, but we didn't play well enough. And then they heard me speak, expecting some kind of South American accent. And then they heard my accent and they're like, ugh, that's the strangest Argentinian I've ever seen. But yeah, a brilliant atmosphere. And that's what the World Cup brings. And that's why it's a heck of a tool for marketing and for whatever else you want. It's the vibes were so good.
That's cool. That's cool. It is one of the great things. I mean, every city in the U.S. to a certain extent can say this, but since I've lived in New York the last almost 16 years, New York from a sports perspective is arguably never more fun than during a major international soccer tournament, whether that be usually the World Cup, but you know, you get some of it too with the Euros, depending on what part of the city you're in.
Yeah.
You can get it too with Copa America. Like the way bars just populate with people from all different countries. It's such a fun time.
If I wanted to go to a bar that was representing each country in this World Cup, I could do it.
Easily. Yeah.
So that says everything.
Let's get right into it. The game that you were talking about, the one that you took in. Where were you? The Black Horse?
Black Horse, yeah. Which is, like, generally is, I mean, it was packed for USA England, and it was packed again for this one. So it's a spot that's become a bit of a hub for World Cup activity. And our friends in South America and Central America, they gravitate towards it because it's just a great place to watch games.
Yeah. I should say real quick before we dive fully into that game, just so people know what's coming up. Like JJ, like you mentioned, we'll get into some of the bigger results from the past few days over the course of this weekend, sort of the things that caught our eye over the last 2 or 3 days or so. And then I should say, because I know I saw, I mean, Twitter was... USMNT Twitter is always a fun place, never more so than during the Eric Winalda, Greg Berhalter situation on Saturday morning. So we will obviously have thoughts on that as well, because I know I have doubled down significantly on Berhalter's reasons for not playing Gio Reyna. It's become a little bit harder to have that position over the last 24 hours.
Thanks, Eric.
So we'll, of course, talk about that, because, again, like we said, like the way storylines build around this tournament, it's a blast. Like, I love it. I absolutely love it.
In the last few days, there was ex-US players running their mouth and ex-US managers really going in hard. We'll get to Jürgen, who, he created a bit of a storm.
Yeah. All those things. And I should say too, obviously on Tuesday, that is the day for the US. That is essentially a playoff game between the United States and Iran to advance to the round of 16. It's one of the biggest games that the U.S. has played in quite some time. We, of course, will have a podcast. We'll have it out later that evening. Can't give you an exact time, but keep those feeds refreshed starting somewhere in the nighttime hours, because we're going to have, I don't know what's going to happen, but I know we're going to have a lot of thoughts on it.
Yeah, and don't let up. Go like, subscribe. We've got our reaction live stream on our YouTube. The link will be in the description for this podcast. So go over there and you can rewatch the way we reacted to England 0, United States 0 the other day. And like, subscribe everywhere. Spotify, iTunes, leave a review. The more reviews, the better.
Indeed. All right, so let's go to the game that we were just talking about that JJ took in amongst Mexican fans while wearing a Boca Juniors jersey. Full kit W or just the shirt?
No, I went with just the shirt.
Coward.
However, Ty, who is a listener of ours, and I hope I'm saying his name properly now, Ty Shalter, he's generally a football guy. At Ty Shalter, TYSCHALTER, he's a football guy of the college American variety. Mm-hmm. He went full kit W.
Nice.
For USA versus England and posted a picture of it.
Good for him.
A lot of respect. Looking slightly like Marcelo Balboa.
if there's ever a time when full kit W is acceptable, it's during a World Cup. I think everyone has full kit W amnesty during this 1 month period. For this game, JJ, first off, Messi. I mean, like, it's why to me it wouldn't be fair in some ways if people want to hold, like, let's say Argentina don't go on and win the World Cup. If people want to go and hold it against him on his legacy that he doesn't have one, there are days like this one, Argentina versus Mexico, that you kind of have to look at it and say, I don't know what else he could have done. Like, the number of times we've seen him put Argentina on his back, we can go back to 2014 when they lost in extra time. He won the golden ball of that tournament. So, like, for me, it's why when people bring up the conversation as to whether or not there will be some... Yeah, if they don't win it, there would be a hole in his resume. But it will never change the way I feel about him as a player, his place in the game. I will always view him as the greatest player I ever saw, whether he gets one or not. And this one against Mexico, with the tension mounting, Argentina kind of staring down the barrel of the possibility of them crashing out in one of the great World Cup disappointments in recent history. And when you need someone to stand up and be counted upon, there he is. Who else but him?
Yeah, I thought just to focus on his goal. First of all, even in the run-up to the game, he looked much more relaxed. So this guy, whatever weight has been exercised from his shoulders with that Copa America win, it continues despite the loss to Saudi Arabia. He did look relaxed. Now, he got kicked around the place, as many Argentinian players did in that first half by Mexico. That was... I got text messages from home, Andrew. So we're exposed to a lot of CONMEBOL and a lot of CONCACAF football. So we see that some of these games... And please don't think I'm doing a culturalism on it. It is, especially the tense games. There's not a quarter given. There is a lot of...
They're
of
nasty.
It's nasty, tough tackling, turgid stuff. You can't say that the first half wasn't the case. And you're wondering, can Messi flourish in this? But the goal, the quick touch, Mexico for 1 second, 10 seconds, leaving a circle of space for him was just such a fatal error. And the way he slides it home, how many times have we seen him do that for club and country? It was just quintessential Messi, and it really gave Argentina what they needed. Now, you say about him taking the team on his back, the concern would be, I'm more generous than Tim Vickery. I thought on the 24th or 20th, it took them 25 minutes for Argentina to put any kind of coherent move together. Tim Vickery says it took them till the 50th minute to put a cohesive passage of play together. Again, they toiled, they struggled, they had to grind it out. Part of it was their own inability to get flow going. A big part of it was Mexico's kind of resilience and, in a way, and please don't take this the wrong way, Mexican fans, negativity. I mean, they were pretty negative. So you'd worry then if people just watch that game and think, well, this is how we stop Argentina. We play five at the back, we cut off passing lanes, and we tackle and foul and tackle and foul and get in their faces as much as possible, then we can stop them. But Argentina got it done. Had Messi not had that moment of space and also inspiration, you wonder if this was just going to grind to a nil-nil. It certainly felt that way.
It did. It did. And you could just see the release of all that tension when he went and did that. And it was never more evident than on the face. Who was it? Pablo Aimar, the assistant manager for Argentina, who the camera, I think, found him on the Argentinian side after that goal had gone in. And he's in tears. Like, that's an assistant manager. And like, these are the people who are supposed to kind of keeping everyone calm and measured. Like, it just goes to show that the pressure on that country, I don't know if there's any country feeling it in a bigger way, because again, they're not just playing for their nation. I do think that they all feel this responsibility to try to get him, to try to get Messi one of these across the line, because they just know that he should have one. Like I said, for me, it won't affect anything in terms of how I view him, but it would feel right for him to get one. It's why Argentina is kind of the sentimental favorite in this World Cup for so many people. And, you know, something I've been wondering about, JJ, with regards to Argentina, I wonder if the pressure on them to ensure that this disappointment doesn't happen in the group stage, that if they're able to survive that, if then we'll see them kind of like be able to really breathe once they get to the knockout stage, and then we'll see the real version of them. Like, when the competition is supposed to get harder, I wonder if it then might actually become easier for them because of the release that they'll feel getting out of this. Like, for like, as a comparison, something near and dear to my heart, the Phillies this year in baseball. Like, they hadn't been in the play. They had the longest streak of not making the playoffs in the National League. They've had some close calls. This year, it came right down to the wire, and they did it. They got into the postseason, and it felt like there was this, like, oh, okay, we did the hard part. And then when it's supposed to get harder, that's when they kicked on and they were free. They weren't thinking, and they wound up, next thing you know, they wound up 2 wins away from winning a World Series. I wonder if something like that could happen with Argentina as well, where when it's supposed to get tougher, they'll feel freer in going about it.
Yeah, possibly. And also maybe what they'll be looking for from this Mexican, this victory over Mexico is that sense of, okay, we've got the win now. That this can be kind of a jumping off point, that their football will get incrementally better. I don't know. It didn't happen in 2018 after the win over Nigeria. No, they ran into France in the knockout round, which was a thrilling game in which they were, I mean, fairly soundly beaten, I suppose. So I really don't know. But they'll need to play better. They can play better, and surely every team they play from here on in is not going to be as difficult and as obtuse as Mexico.
And let's go to that side of it now, the Mexican side of it, because I've been thinking about the manager there, Tata Martino, and how he entered this tournament, I would say, in a bad place with that team and with the fan base, by his own admission. I mean, he knew that there was a target on him coming into this. And then I saw Hercules Gomez tweet the following about Tata Martino. He says, lost CONCACAF Nations League final versus the U.S. Lost Gold Cup final versus the U.S. C team. Unable to beat U.S., Canada, and Costa Rica at Azteca in World Cup qualifying. Lost in Cincinnati versus the U.S. Lost in Edmonton versus Canada. All this in the last 18 months leading up to FIFA World Cup. JJ, I think about the way the U.S. fan base treats Greg Berhalter, who has been on the winning side of half of those mentions just made by Hercules Gomez. Yeah. Imagine if old Triple G had lost all of those. First of all, if he had, he's not sniffing this tournament. He's probably gone months ago. The fact that Tata has lasted this long is a minor miracle in itself for a nation in Mexico that went through a period of time where they were changing managers like I change underpants. And here he is now in this moment. They're not playing very well. I mean, it's not good for this guy, and I don't see a way that I guess what I'm saying is I'm reading through all that. I'm kind of surprised that he even made it this far, and I don't know what his future would be with this team. If they find their way out of this into the knockout round, then I guess all bets are off. Sure, I guess he can continue, but I'm surprised that he's made it to this point.
Yeah, it's funny. I didn't think that much about. Of course, I thought about Tata Martino afterwards, because I do feel there was, like, he was going to there was a feeling he was going to be the silver bullet for this team. But I just kind of looked at the team in general. Like, if you look at the midfield, Andrew, did you not think when Guardado was substituted and even every time the camera would pan to Hector Herrera, that's a 36-year-old and a 32-year-old. And then they bring on Raul Jimenez. I know even Hector Moreno, he's 34. It just seems like this team is in transition and it hasn't really found its youthful step yet. And he hasn't been able to integrate newer, younger players. They look kind of old. And if anything, if there is one thread, albeit a thread that Croatia challenged a little bit today against Canada, it's that the younger, more athletic, faster teams are to the fore, be that Morocco, be that whoever, and that teams like, we'll say, Mexico, Belgium, Wales, with older key players in their sides are really struggling. And that's what came across to me yesterday. Mexico just seemed a bit over the hill.
I know the lineup change, the formation change was a huge deal in the build-up to that. Mexico have traditionally played one way. And then on the eve of this game against Argentina, one of the biggest games in recent Mexican history, they switched up to the 5-3-2. Mm. I don't know if that was... I mean, in the end, it will wind up going down, I guess, as a mistake. It almost worked, though. Like, it took a moment of messy magic. I mean, if that's what it takes to beat your system, I think you kind of have to sometimes just tip your cap to the opposition.
I think so, but the best it was going to get was a draw, which I suppose in the context, I mean, that would have had them on 2 points. I suppose that would have been good. But like, they offered so little. Outside of the free kick, which Emi Martinez, I thought it was actually a pretty good save, but he also caught it, which kind of, when you see a ball go over the wall and the keeper doesn't tip it around the post, he can actually catch it and bring it to the ground with a full-length dive. Makes me think there was an element of camera save and comfortability.
Performative.
Yeah, more performative. I mean, outside of that, what did they do? Not much.
No. What was the feeling in the bar? Did you talk to some of the fans
there?
Yeah,
I talked to people afterwards, basically because they came up and they were quite willing to say Argentina deserved it. And they were a little upset with the... I mean, there was only twice or three times that a full Mexico chant just swept through the bar. Mm-hmm. And there was a sense that they were disappointed with the tactics. And that's from every single Mexico fan. There was no recriminations. There was nothing about the referees. There was nothing about, it took Messi to beat us. It was none of that. They felt they were soundly beaten. And I wonder if that represents the greater Mexican support across America and Mexico itself. I would guess that it might.
I would guess that as well. And now looking ahead to what the final group stage match will mean for them, Mexico must beat Saudi Arabia to have a chance and win by four or more goals. Winning by four or more goals would guarantee qualification. Mm-hmm. If Poland and Mexico win, Mexico finish second. If Poland lose and Mexico win, second place will be decided between Poland and Mexico on group goal difference and goals scored, and Mexico would have to overturn a deficit of four goals. I don't think they would be anyone's favorite right now to go through, but it's still possible. They're going to need some help.
Yeah, and they're going to have to play beyond themselves, certainly beyond what they've done so far. They were good. In the sense, not good, but they were resolute versus Poland. Hardly a huge attacking threat there either. Their system got found out somewhat against Argentina, or they weren't able to turn that into a positive result. And now they're going to have to go and play football, win a game. And that's a challenge. And you wonder, can they do it?
Yep, we'll see. Let's see. We continue now. JJ, another one of the games that caught our eye from over the holiday weekend. France, they take down Denmark 2-1 in a tight one. France, the only team that has qualified for the round of 16 after the first two matches, which it's an accomplishment given all of the injuries that they've been dealt over the course of before the tournament and even now during the tournament. It's an impressive feat. Denmark are not an easy opponent, and they showed that, but France are just, even with everything that they're dealing with injury-wise, they're just on a different level. And watching this one, I mean, I guess the storyline coming out of this is just Mbappe. I mean, he's just one of those guys who can kind of take a game upon himself and make it his. And I'm just wondering about him. Did he need this? He's coming off a disappointing Euros. And then with PSG, you know, there's like, I don't know, he's kind of cast himself as a little bit of a villain maybe between all the, is he going to go? Oh, he's signing a new contract, but then immediately turns around and now says he wants to go. There's been questions about, you know, the figure that he is in that room among his teammates, how he's viewed. You know, it seemed like a little bit of a negative narrative was building around him despite his great play. But now on the biggest stage imaginable, he's already having an unbelievable tournament. And it feels like, again, like he's great no matter what, but I don't know, felt like he was in need of a good thing to happen. And it's certainly happening for him right now.
Well, we're getting a lot of, not a lot, but you have the same kind of likely characters on social media. Whenever you tweet something or do something on the podcast that they don't like or don't want to hear about, you get the old stick to soccer. And I think it's nice for Mbappe to come to a World Cup and just stick to soccer, not be the CEO of Paris Saint-Germain, not be the kind of upset superstar, the prima donna who now reportedly wanted to leave. I mean, think of all the reports we were reading from people like Julien Laurent about how he's asked to leave just months after being handing the keys to the club. So you're right. He absolutely needed to do this. Now, we've seen in the Champions League in flashes him just totally reminding us of what a force he is. But that's really all we've had because, no disrespect to Ligue 1, not that many people watch it. And those who keep an eye on it expect PSG to win every single game. So his exposure is in the Champions League and with this French national team. So when you see him do what he did yesterday, in flashes, I mean, there was 12, I think it was the 35th minute where it was an onslaught left and right wing from France. And you just felt like I tweeted that Denmark needed halftime 12 minutes early. They really did. And they did so well to come back into the game and tie it up. But I mean, in terms of the XG, France were well on top. But back to Mbappe. Yes. Categorically, yes. All we needed to see from him and hear from him was football-related things and nothing to do with his, his PSG life and any turmoil that might be there. So he's given us that. He really has. Yeah. There is a sense, though, after two games that as good as the French are, they're only probably going to get better. And again, another interesting wrinkle is that, it may be too early for this kind of thing, but the articles are being written about how there's a better balance to this French team where they don't have to accommodate Benzema at centre forward. It doesn't lessen Benzema as a player. We're just talking about the system.
But it does a little if the suggestion is that France may be better off without him.
No, but sometimes it's like, do you ever think, I often thought with Frank Lampard, like when Frank Lampard had his first season and he could make no transfers and he finished what in the top four. And everyone thought, what a good season from Frank Lampard. How well has he done? And I thought the minute that they were given $200 million to spend on all these weapons, that's the minute Frank fell apart because he's like, what do I do with all these? And I think there's that element to France too, that if you reduce it down to the core elements of the speed from Dembele and from Mbappe with a very selfless centre forward in Giroud, that you can get the best out of the team. Like sometimes the simple is the best. Like your favourite meal is often the least complicated meal. You know, I love beans on toast. It's very, very simple, but it's so tasty and it's got all the elements and I can make it. And Didier Deschamps is a beans on toast manager. He's not a guy that has a complicated system. He's never had. And now that he's just got enough firepower that he can put on the field, that is just perfect. He doesn't want to be overcomplicated. Just keep it simple.
You know, there is something to that. You've swayed me a little, because you start to miss out on the situations of like guys overthinking a pass. Like, okay, right. I think Mbappe's there, but Benzema's calling for it. I don't want to piss him off. You know, you start like maybe you have a little more harmony in the locker room in terms of guys who like know what their role is. versus guys who aren't playing but feel like they should be playing. Like, yeah, so I guess we can see that now. The problem would be as the tournament goes on and they're going to start facing harder opposition, then, like, okay, when it's nil-nil and it's just, like, not working, it'd be nice to have a Karim Benzema who can just create something out of absolutely nothing, because we've seen him do it over and over again in the last calendar year for Real Madrid. So, like, that's where you miss it. But for here and now, I get what you're saying.
Agree. But, like, how nice is this? You know, for Giroud as the number nine, that's a given. We all know he's a really good player and probably a chronically underrated one. I don't know how much more he has to do. But Kylian Mbappe down the left, Griezmann central, floating around creating things, and then Dembele on the right-hand side. That's nice. That's sure. Really nice.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Mbappe, JJ, he's now scored more World Cup goals than Thierry Henry. Mbappe is 23 years old, and Henry played in 4 World Cups. That's pretty remarkable. I guess I don't know who that says more about. Should Henry have scored a lot more goals than he did?
Yeah, but don't forget, Henry's first tournament was 1998, and he was still in that, oh no, am I a winger? Am I a striker? Oh no, Stefan Givarsh is number 9, a man who would then never score a goal again. He didn't score in that tournament at all. So France have been like this. And then Euro 2000, he wasn't, like, Henri wasn't the main striker there. You could argue, I mean, there was a couple of guys who came in and scored goals for them. There was, like, Sylvain Viltor, and there was...
David Trezeguet.
There was Trezeguet there, too. So there was a lot of competition for places there. And there was Christophe Dugarry. Yeah, you know, so... So France had, like, had a lot of players there. And really, Henri was towards, I would say... after Euro 2000, then after he exploded at Arsenal, from those years on to the mid-2000s and then on to 2010, that he was really head honcho, main guy number one.
Yeah. So France into the round of 16, the only nation so far to have qualified for that. A couple other ones quickly, JJ. Robert Lewandowski finally scores his first World Cup goal. Boy, didn't look like it meant much to him, huh? He only broke down on the field in the middle of a game.
What a gift, though, too. And you can see it's one of those where the defender is trying to open out. He's doing the right thing, and he's just left it a bit too far, and he's stretching, and you're like, uh-oh. And in goes Lewandowski, who slots it home. And what an excellent win for Poland. That's 4 points. That's really, really good. And Lewandowski can now get that proverbial... chip off his shoulder, or that non-goal scoring issue off his back. He's there. He scored his goal. Forget about it. He can kick on. So I meant to ask you, the video of Renard, the Saudi Arabian manager, was going round. Okay. Mm-hmm. And everybody was tweeting it. Look at this. Look at his passion at halftime against Argentina when they're losing. Look how he inspires people. And he's talking through an interpreter. And you never see the video where a team gets hammered 5-0. You know, you don't see that one, or they're beaten 2-0. You never see the halftime team talking that. You only see these ones. And so that kind of skews, for me, their value. And he's shouting, if you want a picture with Messi, take a picture, and all this stuff. I want to see his halftime for the defeat at Poland. I want that.
Right.
Okay? Give me that.
That's a great point. I mean, it's sadly jaded, your inability to receive inspiration, but it doesn't mean that you're wrong. It doesn't mean that you're wrong. another one, too, speaking of viral videos, the Australians know how to celebrate a goal, don't they? The scenes from back in Australia with the goal that they scored to go on and beat Tunisia, I mean, it's just... I just want to be there. I want to be a part of that.
Absolutely awesome. I'm so happy because through the ESPN feed, we've got this like cohort of Australian supporters and listeners. And we got the guys from Kirrawee that sent us those jerseys before, big soccer club. And I've got loads of messages. I put up, well done to our Australian listeners. We've got loads of messages. Thank you. And they're absolutely buzzing. It was a really good finish from Dukes as well. It was good stuff. Now, I mean, it was an unexpected victory. They've still got a bit to do. But, after what happened against France, to bounce back and win a game,
So that was, for me, you know, it's now happened several times throughout the course of this tournament, and we'll get into it when we talk a little bit about Costa Rica. But
crazy.
The Australia game was when I started to kind of wake up to the fact that, okay, this World Cup is going to be different. Like, the takeaways that we may have had from game one mean Jack S in game two, and then the takeaways that we have from game two will mean Jack S in game three. Like, I think that this tournament is going to just be I don't know if there's going to be a common thread through these games. It feels like it's just going to be every game is a standalone tournament unto itself, because Australia were just absolutely mauled and taken apart. Granted, it was by France, but they just looked so overmatched that you kind of thought, well, like, okay, well, they're bottom of the group and everybody else will be playing for second and third or whatever, and France will top it. But no, like, they bounce right back and they take down Tunisia and they're right back in the thick of this. And it's just, I think we've seen that now on repeat throughout the course of this tournament. And it was cool to see the Aussies be one of those teams to have done that.
Yeah. The XG philosophy tweeted, "This World Cup has had no regard for XG." So we're going to get to this game, but Japan 1.05, Costa Rica 0.12. Who wins that game? Argentina 0.29, Mexico 0.22. That was much tighter than I originally thought. France 2.58, Denmark 0.77. So that kind of played out. I mean, I guess France probably should have scored more. Poland 2.04, Saudi Arabia 1.87, but Tunisia and Australia, like Tunisia 1.10, Australia 0.61. Mm-hmm. So you're right. There's a lot going on that kind of defies. You can play well. I mean, it's always the case in soccer, but you can play pretty well and still come out on the wrong side in this World Cup, which adds a
little. Deserve is nothing.
Deserve is nothing. One of my greatest ever rants on this podcast. I hate rant. Rant isn't right. One of my greatest ever comments.
Monologue?
Soliloquy. Yeah, that's pretty good.
One other thing on Australia, just like expounding a little bit more on the scenes that you saw when that goal happened and the parties that ensued. I've been wondering about Australia. You know, I think of the United States as a sports mad culture.
Yeah.
You know, we have certainly, you know, I'd say there's a lot of sports here that are a huge effing deal that, you know, stadiums are filled every weekend for a lot of different sporting events. That's hard to do. And not every country has a sports culture like that. And as a sports fan that lives in the United States, I love that. It's awesome. I feel like Australia has a lot of that in their culture as well. I think that is also a sports mad country between the way they feel about Australian rules football, rugby, soccer. Like, they got a lot of time for a lot of different sports. Cricket, sure. I mean, that's, you know, even like going to tennis, you know, Australian Open is a huge deal. You know, that I work now with a couple Australians at my job. And, you know, you get a sense from them that, like, sports is a way of life in that country. I know this is true of a lot of places, but I don't know. I feel like I get a sense that sports mean just a ton in that place, which I think is, again, yet another reason why I secretly want to be Australian.
Yeah. And, you know, because I've always found them to be through the TV shows of Home and Away and Neighbours, very popular soap operas in the UK and in Ireland, too. I've always found them a deeply attractive people. But, of course, you only put attractive people on TV as well. But, no, Australian rules football is a massive sport, huge sport. It's, I mean, by the way, Ireland sends, well, sometimes Gaelic footballers, amateur Gaelic footballers are recruited and they go and play Australian rules football down there, because I'm sure way back in the day, during the days of the Empire, there was a crossover between the two sports. In fact, I firmly believe Gaelic football was the precursor to Australian rules football down there. But they've got rugby union and rugby league, you know. I mean, soccer's kind of well down the charts there.
It's true.
But it's growing. You wouldn't know it. Yeah, it's growing.
Yeah. Let's see. A couple other games, obviously, we kind of move into earlier today on Sunday in just... The Japan Costa Rica match. So I full disclosure, I did not see this one.
I thought I could. I'm just like you. I thought this is one I could give a miss to.
And it was 5 in the morning. on a Sunday. We had a lot of family over for a second Thanksgiving. We did first Thanksgiving with my side of the family, then second Thanksgiving on Saturday with my wife's side of the family.
The animals are right. You are so bougie and upper class.
Is that bougie?
Two Thanksgivings.
Anyone can do that. It's not a money thing.
Oh, that's decadent.
It's all exclusively leftovers that were eaten.
If you were doing, like, if there was a E! True Hollywood, like, kind of... into a famous family, we'll say like the Kardashians. The Kardashians spent two Thanksgivings this year. That's the territory you're in.
They're just spending time with both sides of the family. Mm. This is, look.
In different wings of your mansion in Westchester.
Look, you're the Pied Piper. I'm sure everyone will go along with what you're saying. Oh, bougie Andy. But this is a bad take, all right? This is just spending time with family and eating leftovers.
I got it. I'm only winding you up.
But anyway, so like there was that. So, you know, there was a little bit of partying going on. Then in the middle of the night, my son had a nightmare. So now he's in our room. So I was like, the clock went off and I was just like, I just can't. And then so I woke up for good and saw what had happened. And I just like, that was when I kind of fired off a tweet that like, we just have to stop. We got to stop predicting stuff and making assumptions about teams in this tournament, because this is now the World Cup of unpredictability. We don't know what we don't know. And you know, to see Costa Rica lose 7-0 and it not bother them, they come back in their next game and win, not just draw, but go on and win against a team that had just pulled off the second biggest upset of the tournament themselves in Japan. It's just like, I don't know. Nothing really makes sense here. And you talk about deserve is nothing. I mean, how did Costa Rica do this? They touched the ball twice in the opponent's box. They scored on one of them. Japan completely dominated the game. But that's the story of this tournament. And it's making me think something sort of, I guess, the unpredictability of this tournament combined with what you were saying before about this tournament, some of the older legs looking older than normal. You know, I'm wondering if just one of the byproducts of this tournament happening when it is,
is
it's yielding a more unpredictable game. Players who are, for their club teams, have been playing, you know, in a frantic schedule domestically with Champions League and Europa League games mixed in. If they are just more tired than some of these smaller nations whose leagues either maybe took place in another calendar part of the year, they have players who are not necessarily playing the sort of frantic schedule that some of the bigger club players have been. I don't know. Maybe I'm reaching, but it doesn't feel like a coincidence to me that so many strange results are coming out of this tournament.
We thought there might be some unpredictability. I do think in some cases it's the case that, look, Wales, why have Wales been kind of in general play really poor? I think it's just one tournament too far for them. Ditto Belgium. But I would also think workload has got a lot to do with it. And I think more athletic, robust, younger sides who aren't involved in the craziness of top flight football. So they're not playing Saturday or Sunday and then Tuesday, Wednesday or Thursday. They're not in that cycle. I definitely think it's to their benefit. You kind of buried the lead a bit there, though, Andrew, like in what you said, because you tweeted this out this morning. Costa Rica broke records against Japan with that fewest touches. You have to go back to 1966 for a winning side to have such few touches in the opposition box, according to Optogene. 1966. I mean, it was a different, absolutely different game then. So, credit Costa Rica for defying those odds. And I'm sure Japan, now they've been brought crashing back to earth and now realizing that that group is extremely interesting. And there's going to need to be a little bit of work done there. So we've got Spain on top at 4 points, and then it's Japan on 3, Costa Rica on 3, and the Germans on 1.
Mm.
The final round of games there is going to be exquisite.
Really is. I mean, it was probably the most compelling group coming in with Spain
and Michael
Germany
Goodman
both.
Called it. Michael Goodman. He said it. He felt that there could be something sneaky happening in that group, and we wonder if it's going to be Germany that come out on the wrong side of it. Right now, it appears so.
Yeah, I mean, while we're talking about that, should we just go to that game, Spain and Germany?
Yeah, let's really, do that one.
A really nice 1-1 draw. Game played at a pretty high level. Fun game. Lots of marquee talent out there. Lots of near chances for either side to go on and take this one. But like I said, it does end 1-1. And you asked the question in the rundown of who would be happier with this outcome. Like we say, with all draws, there is a winner and a loser.
Yeah.
I mean, look, they're only on 1 point. It's not good for Germany, but think of the alternative. They were about to be eliminated. So just the fact that they at least have a pulse heading into the final group stage match, I think they got to think, okay, we got Spain was always going to be the one, you know, granted they lost to Japan, but coming in, they always thought, okay, well, Spain is obviously going to be the tough one. Well, they went into that one needing a result or else, and they did get one. So I think if you're Germany, you're breathing a little bit of a sigh of relief right now, even though the odds still may be a little bit stacked against them.
I think you're right. I think in the context of the game, in the overall context, they would have wanted to somehow get a win against Spain. But when Morata scored that goal, which I thought was a brilliant Spanish goal, it looked curtains. It looked really bad because that came after a period of German pressure, and Germany didn't score, and then Spain go and score, and then you're like, oh, so how are they going to do this? But they managed to. In fact, it was. And I'm not blaming anybody, but it was when Balde came in at left back for Spain. You know, they often say on a substitution, sometimes a player comes in and he's not in tune with the game. I'm not actually going to blame him, but there was a ball played into him that it was overhit. It was a turnover in midfield. And because Balde tries to retrieve the ball, he's out of position. And it allows Germany to attack down that right-hand side, the left-hand side of the Spanish defence, and get in and full Krug to finish as emphatically as he did. And if that moment doesn't happen, I don't think Germany score. I don't think they do. And so it ends up 1-0. So yeah, you're right. Actually, a point, considering everything that happened in that game, was something of a good result in the end for the Germans. Should mention, Füllkrug's story, like a year ago, he was playing in the second division, I think for Hanover. Or it was probably actually Werder Bremen. And like to come from where he's come from is pretty amazing. He's the oldest outfield player to make his debut for Germany in 20 years. So he made it in a friendly against Oman. He at age 29 years and 280 days. Martin Max was 33 when he made his debut for Germany in 2002, which was kind of generally considered to be an old German team. So a big moment for him to come on and score the equalizer in a World Cup for Germany.
Incredible. I mean, he's probably only there because of the Timo Werner injury, no?
Yeah, possibly. He also gives them, he's just a big slab of a man. And kind of gives them that, I know we're getting into cliche territory again. He gives them something else, Andrew. But he took his goal extremely well. And if not for him, Germany were in serious. I mean, they were going out of the tournament, effectively.
Yeah, yeah, potentially. You know, I say before that the odds may be stacked against them. Maybe not. So the German scenario is they've got to beat Costa Rica to have a chance. And if they win by 8 goals, that secures them top two in any scenario. However, if Germany and Spain both win, Germany finish second. That is the most likely scenario of things to happen. So I would say that I guess you'd rather be Germany right now than anyone else, with the exception of Spain. So for however this has gone so far, they're through 2 group stage matches without a win. It's not doom and gloom. I would say you'd probably, I guess I'll retract what I said earlier and say you probably would bet on them at this point to still make it through. And boy, Japan just, it was all there for them. I mean, to have beaten Germany with Costa Rica up next, like they should be in right now. We'll see how things go in their final group stage match against Spain. But of all the teams right now in this tournament, I would think Japan are the ones that'll really be kicking themselves because they did what felt like the hard part, and they could not finish the job against an opponent that had just been shellacked 7-0. This is going to be a tournament of what ifs potentially for them.
Very true. Can I just direct people towards a good piece by Barney Roney, who was at the Al Bat Stadium for Spain against Germany, and the headline is no strikers bad, two strikers good, as Spain and Germany shared the spoils. There were no goals until Alvaro Morata and Nicholas Fulkrug came on, changing the scoreline, if not the outcome. And I'm not gonna get into the whole debate over, you know, will Germany have enough goals in them? Possibly not. Should Spain be playing without a out and out striker? Possibly not. But it was just an interesting little tweak. And I want to say, for all the criticism that Morata gets on this podcast, and he does get a lot, I thought he took that goal extremely well. And German fans can shout, and they have been shouting about Süle not getting across, and that it was somehow his fault. I think it's a brilliant ball in, and I honestly think that it's a better finish than people are giving him credit for.
It's a great finish.
Yeah,
it's a great finish from him.
Yeah, and it reminded me of the second Moroccan goal today against Belgium with the outside of the foot, which flew into the roof of the net as well. Very, very nice finishes at the near post.
Yeah, Morocco 2, Belgium 0, as Belgium are now emerging as the lead favorite for most disappointing team in this tournament so far. Granted, they did win a game, but no one thought they were better than Canada, despite what the scoreline read after that one was over. And then again today, this time they went up against a team who punished them for playing similarly. And I guess, JJ, if we're going to talk before about players maybe looking a little bit older, players who have had a frantic schedule, that coming back and kind of biting them right now in this tournament. I mean, look, I love the guy. He's my EPL preseason pick every single year for player of the season. But the human embodiment of that right now appears to be Kevin De Bruyne. His stats today, this is from Statman Dave on Twitter. Kevin De Bruyne's game by numbers versus Morocco, 75% pass accuracy, 2 for 5. On ground duels, one of five crosses completed, 0 for 2 on dribbles completed, 0 shots on target. But JJ, the stat that he posts here that stands out to me the largest, 27 times possession lost for Kevin De Bruyne. I mean, and then he finishes it off by saying non-existent. I don't know. You look at losing possession 27 times, I don't know that I think non-existent would have actually been an improvement from what his actual performance
was. Detrimental.
I think he hurt them. Yeah. Up there, which is not something we say about this guy.
I have to say, though, you can pick so many other players, Andrew, that you can talk about Eden Hazard. I mean, there was lots of commentary after the game that, like, Trossard, when he comes in, just looks so much. I mean, he is younger. I was going to say he looks younger. He is younger and more lively and energetic and gives you more. That maybe we've come to the point where Hazard shouldn't be starting. The thing I would say about Belgium, and it's a real problem across two games, is that I don't know what they're doing. There is nothing going on. They neither pass and move the ball well, they neither link play well, they neither create chances or defend particularly well. Like, I know they're at the end of their line as a team, and I genuinely feel it was rotten luck and unfortunate they came up against such an inspired and an obdurate opponent in 2018, because this was their peak. They are so far off it, Andrew. They're washed. Like, they're bad. Like, I don't know what they're trying to do. And you don't see any of the movement of the 2016 or 2018 versions. They're nowhere. And I wonder if it is time to do something drastic and, like, hook Hazard, because I don't think he's not going to pull De Bruyne out of the team. I don't think he'll do that. But when, I mean, just I want people who watch the game to cast your mind back to when Lukaku came on the field. Did you see some of the passes they played to him or to try and get him involved? Like, it was amateur hour stuff. There was one ball from deep. I'm not sure who played it. I think it was Alderweireld. And the look that was given by Lukaku back the field, the glare, like, what the hell was that? What do you want me to do with that? Like, they just pegged the ball, pinged it at him, and it just shot out over the end line, I think, straight through to the goalkeeper. Just shapeless. Whereas, on the other hand, their opposition, Morocco, looked full of verve and vim and zest and youth. Just better.
Yeah. for however bad it might be for Belgium, it's still all there for them. They definitely qualify with a win against Croatia. It's as simple as that. Win and in. Even a draw could be enough if Morocco lose.
And we should mention, I thought Ziyech was brilliant.
He's kind of Moroccan Pulisic. Like a player who I'm sure Moroccan fans are watching him at Chelsea just screaming at their television set saying, why can't this guy get some game time? And now he's come on with his national team and he's played really well and he'll probably get a move somewhere else and Moroccan fans will be happy.
Yeah, I thought Boufal was great too, formerly of Southampton. I thought they were really, really, really good. And if you want to listen to us talk about Morocco and some of the African teams, you can still listen to our chat on YouTube about them. We went into a bit of depth on those teams. And Morocco were a team that were flagged. But I honestly never thought Belgium would be this bad. I thought they'll get out of the group. And they may well do that. But I do not see them beating Croatia, Andrew.
It's the tournament of unpredictability, JJ. As you pass judgment on somebody, Belgium, they'll go on and win the whole damn thing now. that's what this tournament has become.
Well, if they do, they have to make major personnel changes because this is a nice segue into Canada and Croatia. If they do, they'll have to come up with a performance for the ages against a Croatian team that, after an iffy start, really came into their own and most assuredly were not effed by Canada.
I mean, you talk about fun storylines in this tournament. This, for me, is probably number one on the power rankings of fun World Cup narratives or storylines. John Herdman gathering his Canadian players at midfield after their loss to Belgium and pumping them up, saying, you belong here, you've proved you belong here, and now we're going to go and F Croatia. And then he made the mistake of saying that publicly afterwards. Yeah. Like, he could have just said, no, that's between myself and my team. Like, he was in the moment, he was feeling it, and he went out and he told everyone that that's what he said. Croatia took that. I mean, they ran with it. The newspapers in Croatia certainly ran with it as they put a naked John Herdman on the front of their tabloids with a little Canadian flag over his mouth and other parts.
They really made him out to be.
He has the mouth but doesn't have the testicles. And I'll say this, for Canada to come out in the face of that and score a minute and 9 seconds into this game, it was actually incredible. It was a scream out loud moment because I think everybody was sort of like, if I told you before this game, someone's going to score in the first 2 minutes, 9 out of 10 people would have said, okay, well, that's Croatia because they're furious right now and they can't wait for this game to happen. But it was Canada. That was one of the ballsiest moments of this tournament. Now, what happened over the next 88 plus minutes suggested that Croatia was, in fact, very much up for this game. But for Canada to do that after Croatia had kind of retorted the way they did to John Herdman's comments, it was a pretty balls moment for the Canadians. They just couldn't sustain it.
And listen, because our friends to the north are going out, we should luxuriate in that move, which was just a very quick move to kind of beat the Croatian press. Tejan Buchanan with a beautiful first touch carries the ball forward and then a brilliant cross to find Alfonso Davies, who's racing through. One of those arrivals in the box that are so hard to deal with from a defensive standpoint, pops up in the gap, heads home. And you did scream. I screamed when that goal went in.
Yeah.
And it doesn't get much better than that. Literally, it did not get any better than that.
No, no.
And
that was maybe the pinnacle of Canadian soccer was that moment.
Now, you hope that they round out the tournament in some kind of fashion in the last game. But what happened afterwards was they had 2 to 3 really good chances. And then they did not take them. And it all just fell apart because Croatia grew into the game. That Croatian midfield really kind of started to take over and looked very, very good. I mean, like Brozovic, Modric, Kovacic, Kramaric up front, Perisic, it all started to click. And unfortunately for Canada, and you know, I mean, it was obvious Atiba Hutchinson was really struggling in midfield. Now, Atiba Hutchinson is 39 years of age, so it's a lot to ask. And these gaps started showing right in front of the Canadian defence. And you saw what absolutely could not happen was Croatian players running with the ball, attacking that back four. I thought Johnson at right back, Alistair Johnson, really struggled, Andrew. I thought he had a rough one. That defence as a whole did. But the midfield was where it kind of fell apart. And I do think that we've been nothing but full of praise for John Herdman. He's done an incredible job as Canadian manager, but he needed to make a change much, much quicker. And it was too late. It was 2-1 all of a sudden. And then it was all Croatia after that. And it could have got much more ugly than it did. He needed to get Hutchinson out of there. He needed to kind of just make things compact and harder to run at and expose that defence. And he never did. And it was 2-1 before he even had a chance to really address it. And that was that. Croatia, very, very good. And unfortunately, Canada just running out of steam at this tournament. And really, they needed that first game was there for them.
Yeah, that was the one. That was the folly one that killed them.
Yeah, the folly of the penalty. Like giving it to a guy who just doesn't take penalties.
Yeah. I will say this on kind of going up against what you said there and defending John Herdman a little bit, saying he needed to make a change quicker. I mean, he made two huge subs at halftime. Like, I don't know how much quicker you would have expected. Like, what, do you want him to take guys out in the 35th minute? Like, you're not going to do that. So, like, he took out Eustachio at the half.
Andrew,
he took out Kyle Larin at the half, brought on Osorio and Adekegbe, or Ismail Kone. He did try. He didn't just sit back and allow this to continue. I thought he was proactive. It just, Croatia is just that much better.
This is Joe Callan, who writes for the Toronto Star. He tweeted this: John Herdman hasn't made many of them, but a mistake there not reinforcing midfield. If he didn't want to take Atiba off before halftime, so be it. But he could have moved Davies to left back, Larin to left midfield, and Larea as an extra body in the middle. Instead, Croatia stayed rampant, and now it's 2-1. I mean, that midfield was crying out for another body in there, something to reinforce it, Andrew. It didn't have to be a substitution per se, but Hutchinson was getting overran. They were getting overran as a unit, and it was a bit of a tactical naivety. Now, that said, how many times do Canada come up against this level of sophistication in CONCACAF? Like, never.
No.
Never. So it was a real, real tall order for them.
Yeah, it feels unfortunate. I mean, look, sports are generally a meritocracy. You deserve is nothing, but oftentimes what you get is what you deserve. But it feels wrong to me that they're one of the first teams eliminated.
Oh, totally.
I don't know. I feel like that they, especially what they did against Belgium, you know, one day in the history books, people will go back and look at this tournament and thought, oh yeah, Canada, they went out early. I could have guessed that, but like, no, it wasn't quite like that.
But the unexpected strength of Morocco is what's caused this to come about. Like the fact that Morocco would get a point in the first game and then go and beat Belgium and get 4 points is now, you know, that place, the role of usurper in this group has been taken away from Canada.
Yeah. By the way, here's what Andre Kramaric said afterwards. He said, I want to thank Canada's coach for the motivation. We demonstrated who effed whom. Nice use of the word whom, by the way.
Yeah.
'Twas I whom did the effing.
Not you. You did no effing. I am the effer in chief.
So Croatia looking to, they were obviously in the final 4 years ago, and they're looking to prove that that is not a bridge too far for them once more. JJ, before we get to some of the final issues that we want to discuss on this podcast, with this and really every tournament, not just in soccer, but in all sports, one of the byproducts of this tournament is that we all lose our minds to having to watch the same few commercials over and over and over. And I'm wondering, I'm wondering if there's a certain, so we're only two in, like we still have another like 2.5 weeks of watching these same commercials. I'm wondering if there's any that are already causing you to rip hair out of your head. For me, it's not a full commercial, but there's just one line in one commercial that it just It just does something to me. It reaches a part of my brain that causes a reaction. I wonder if you can guess. Is it? Can you even try to guess?
Okay. Well, I'll say what's for me, and I think it might be for you.
Okay.
The Google advert for the phone, and where they're going. This month, this year, we're awake. We're waking early, and we're waking up for football. And they say it like that, and then blah blah blah, and then they keep saying. You know, it goes to these heads on the Google phone. Football, football, football. And then Megan Rapinoe out of nowhere. It's soccer. Oh, Jesus. And I'm not getting into the soccer versus football debate.
No, I can't. I hate that argument.
I hate it.
Dumb.
I can't stand it.
By the way, all sides of that argument are dumb.
Oh, everybody. You're all terrible. And you're, as someone pointed out on Twitter, you're dweebs for getting involved in it. And if you think, you know, that the chant that gave me the chills, like, it's called soccer.
Yeah, like
oh, God, guys. Christ almighty. Like, awful,
like
awful. And Megan Rapinoe, like, a lot of time for her. But for her to even sign off and say, it's called soccer. Oh, I can't do it.
Okay.
I cannot do it.
For me, the one that I just, again.
Qatar. It's new. It's evolving. Come to Qatar. Everything's fine. Don't worry. Come to Qatar.
Look at us.
Look at the new center we've built. Look at the skyscraper. Sand. Look at Alexi Lalas playing with a falcon. Qatar. Qatar. It's fine. Don't worry. Don't worry. Come.
That is not the one I was going to say. I feel bad saying this because I actually like 95% of the commercial.
All
it's
right.
The Volkswagen Christian Pulisic one.
Oh.
Where they're talking about the pressure. And there's
I'm just here for the mints.
The one line at the end when it's the two people sitting in like the Volkswagen.
Pressure creates diamonds.
Yeah. Every time he says that, pressure, the way he says it, pressure creates diamonds.
Oh.
Like, why? I don't know why. Just, the way he delivers it, I can't hear it anymore, but I'm going to hear it for another 2.5 weeks.
Do you know what's a really bad one as well? Like, it stinks. Clint Dempsey in the Volkswagen driving across the desert, right? And it starts off with clearly a family of actors. And they're like, we love it, we love it, and then we love we follow, we support the US. And they make Clint do it. And it's just the dignity of this man. This man was a warrior. He was like, he had swagger. He had just a menace about him. And to make him sing now in his retirement, I'm sure he's getting loads of money from Volkswagen and US Soccer for it. I'm sure of it. But just, and then he goes, and even his let's go is just so weak. It's like, it's not like, let's go. It's not like a Tom Brady let's go. It's a let's go. Oh, the poor
I'll be
man.
Damned if I'm going to sit here and let you. There are some people in sports that I just have a permanent blind spot for. Allen Iverson is one.
Yeah.
Lord knows he's tested that at times. But I just have one for him. Clint is another. He can do no wrong, and I'm not going to let you sit here and badmouth him on this podcast.
It's a bad advert. But you know what else has got into my brain?
What's that?
So you know there's a song that they play right before the national anthem.
Boy, I really unlocked something in you. Look at you.
Oh,
right
yeah.
Now.
I wanted to do this segment.
He's leaned forward now. He had been reclined for most of this podcast, and then I mentioned annoying commercials, and I've never seen him so excited.
So there was one I wanted to mention. It's not a commercial, but there's there's a part of the song that leads into the national anthems. So they play this in the stadiums and it comes across our TVs and we all hear it. And it's not, it reminds me of another song. So it goes, oh, right, just like that. And all I can think of is, caught in a bad romance, na, na, ooh, na, na, la, la. And so I'm going round the house the other morning singing Bad Romance by Lady Gaga. I haven't a clue why. And my girlfriend's like, will you please stop singing that? This is so, like, I'm going wandering around in my underpants, like, you know, it's one of those mornings. Oh, caught in a bad romance, la la. Like, it's so friggin' annoying for
I'm going to be listening for that now.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure other people have heard it. Oh. Right?
So. Yeah. By the way, real quick, one other note on Clint. I thought it was really cool what they did on Fox when he kind of came out and surprised Landon Donovan and DeMarcus Beasley with letting them know that they had been that they're going to be inducted into the U.S. Soccer Hall of Fame along with Lauren Cheney Holiday, whose story, by the way, is amazing herself as she's dealt with a lot of health issues and is one of the all-time great women's soccer or any soccer player in the U.S. So what a, I mean, what a massive Hall of Fame class with those three going in. But I thought that was cool. My only issue with it was, boy, they did that at like, what time was that? That was like 7 a.m. or earlier. Like, I felt like that should have been done later, maybe when more of the country would have been watching.
Yeah.
Like, no one on the West Coast probably saw that happen live. I think that was after the 5 a.m. game. I'm sure there were a lot of people that would have loved to have seen that. Look, I'm guessing they have their reasons. But that was my only thing. But, yeah, that was cool. And two players, obviously, who any American fan holds dear in DeMarcus and Landon Donovan. Such a huge part of U.S. soccer history, those two guys.
Yeah.
Donovan, just for his overall greatness. Beasley, for his greatness and his versatility. I mean, started out up front. By the last World Cup, and he's still longevity. Playing. Wound up as a fullback at the end. I mean, it was... But he was effective everywhere.
Yeah.
And just a couple of beloved players and Lauren Holiday as well. So that was awesome. I thought that was very cool. Congrats to all of them. That's a great Hall of Fame class going in. Along those lines, JJ, before we get out, a couple things here. Let's stick with U.S. soccer.
Before you do that.
Oh, yeah.
Before you do that, we've probably gone too far in this podcast without the breaking news of the day. The Times of London reporting that Lionel Messi is close to agreeing a deal to join Inter Miami next season, making him by far and away the best paid player in MLS history. So he would come at the end of his contract with PSG, which is in 2023 next year. So that summer. Now, CNN have put out a report by Homera De La Fuente, who says Lionel Messi's rep denies report that Argentina captain is in negotiations with MLS Inter Miami for next season. It's false. It's fake news. He says there is no negotiation for Lionel to join Inter Miami next season. Messi's representative, Marcelo Mendez, said in a statement to CNN. However, the Times, Sunday Times, were reporting that. That's the second time we've heard this now. Is there contractual smoke without contractual fire?
I'm sure there's. I don't know. I'm sure there's smoke with this.
But he does not want that announced in the midst of a World Cup. That is the last.
No, probably not. Look, people. If this happens, I'm sure there will be a little bit of another example of MLS's retirement home kind of narrative around it.
Well, it's an effective retirement from the top level of football, which people think, you know, is he going to go? I mean, the pressure now is on to win a Champions League. That's the way I see it. It's been ramped up a few notches.
But I mean, look, I know MLS has moved in a bit of a different direction. They're trying to grab, you know, younger talent from South and Central America, as opposed to taking back older talent from Europe. I will say, speaking for myself and only myself, all of that be damned. If he wants to come and play in our league, we are happy to have him. Please stay as long as you would like. He will fill up stadiums. He will be incredible. It will be fun to watch. I am here for it. And if I wind up being wrong, so be it. But if it's true, I can't wait to see it. I cannot wait to see it. Small stadiums, you know, good soccer-only venues. People are going to have just like up close views of this guy doing his thing. Boy, I would love to see it.
I think, and I also think that the other component is with the move to Apple, it's going to be huge. That could really help push.
Point.
That could really push subscribers around the world for MLS, which is what they really crave. So he moves the needle and will continue to do so. That was the news that we heard earlier today that Fox even felt strongly enough to talk about on their broadcast from the Sunday Times, a reputable paper of record. And then, of course, the denial, because I really doubt they want this coming out in the midst of a World Cup.
Yeah. Let's see, JJ, a couple quick things before we get out here on this Sunday evening. Eric Wynalda made unbelievable waves as we awoke. On Saturday morning, I like couldn't believe it when I just kind of rolled over in bed and logged into Twitter and just saw like all of the stuff about Berhalter, and it just set off. I mean, it was just like the confluence of just Berhalter mania going on all over the place on Twitter for all different reasons. You had Wijnaldum coming out, dropping this bomb that Gio Reyna is in fact healthy, and Berhalter lied about that and then asked Gio Reyna to go along with the lie. All of that seems strange. And then earlier today, it should be noted that Wijnaldum tweeted about the situation, saying, in reference to Berhalter and Gio, "I think they've worked it out, recognize that they could have handled it better and are moving on, as should we. Focus on the next game, in my opinion." I love telling us to basically, like, hey, calm down, everyone. Like, just let's focus on the next game, everybody. Hey, you're the one who did this. Like, you're the one who caused this firestorm.
It's like being at a dinner party and you're at the end of the table and you've set fire to Daniela. And everyone's like, Daniela's on fire. And you're like, whoa. I set that fire, but I want everyone to focus on this lovely meal.
Yeah.
What about Daniela?
Yeah, you can't have it both ways.
No, you can't. You can't throw grenades and then leave the party and then say, wasn't that terrible about those grenades that got thrown? Like, what are you doing?
And I should say the Berhalter mania, it was that, but at the same time,
it's like the worst wrestling mania ever.
Yeah, but like, I just thought it was so funny because, like, Henry Bushnell, who's a great soccer writer over at Yahoo Sports, I'm sure he obviously didn't know that this was coming, but like, just as all of this Berhalter stuff was coming out, where all of the anti-Triple G people had just been given all this ammunition to pile on him, like, as all that was coming out, poor Henry Bushnell had his Yahoo Sports article get pushed out at the same exact time, which was like entirely based around Greg silencing his critics. Just like, oh no, you don't know what you've just walked into. No, hold on, admin. Don't hit send yet. Let this breathe. We can only deal with one Triple G incident at a time. I mean, look, I had doubled and tripled down on the fact that, like, Greg Berhalter, like, that Reyna, the only feasible, logical explanation for Gio Reyna not playing or only playing 10 minutes through two World Cup matches could be that he's not fully fit. No other explanation makes sense to me. We all know how great he is. We've all been praying for him to finally get back to full fitness, because if he is, we know the impact that he can have. And so this idea that he would be fully fit and still not playing, it just doesn't make sense to me. Obviously, it's harder to have that position. I know there are some people who I've seen on Twitter, kind of fair or not, are referring to Eric Wijnaldum as an unreliable narrator in this. I don't know. I don't know him personally. I think he was on our podcast once or twice before, but I don't.
When
have
he ran
any kind
for
of...
presidential election, he's been on twice.
Yeah, but
the
I don't
first
have
time
any...
he was on to defend the appointment of, even before a ball had been kicked, he was on to tell us why Bob Bradley was going to be great at Swansea.
Okay, that's right. But like, I don't have any personal relationship with him to know how reliable or unreliable he is in this situation. The fact that he referenced Claudio Reyna being raging over this, that adds an element of reliability, because now he's brought someone else into this story.
Yeah.
So if it's true...
We've met Claudio. We had him in studio. Oh, he's one of our first guests.
What a gentleman. He was just great.
I don't see him raging about this, though.
Really? His son being fully healthy? His son having worked back from all these injuries, being fully healthy at a World Cup and not being able to get on the field in two games that were both
not
tied?
Upset, but not raging. He's
again,
an ex-pro.
We don't know him well enough to know what he would be like.
He's an
ex-pro.
He knows
like
how it works. The manager picks the team. He would know
but he's
that.
But he's also a dad.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
like,
true.
So he has a different connection to this. I could see, I don't care how mild-mannered anyone is, I could see anybody raging over something like that,
true,
if it's true. And by the way, I guess I now need to say, myself included, like, if this is true, and I had kind of gone to bat for Greg on this, I don't get it. Now, it's hard to know what is or isn't true here, but like, I had people then kind of tweeting at me about this, almost like coming to my aid, like I needed to be like, kind of like, because I had gone so hard on the fact that Reyna must be hurt, nothing else makes sense.
Yeah.
So people then started tweeting to me kind of saying like, well, even if he's not, you know, there's, what's the obvious place for him? And by the way, there is some validity to that. You and I have talked on this podcast over the last several months on various occasions about the fact that like, between Reyna and Aronson, there's no clear avenue into this team. But the only thing I would say to that is, fine, that may be true, maybe he doesn't start, whatever. But you can't convince me that a 100% fully fit Gio Reyna across two games that are both hanging on a knife's edge doesn't call for him to be played for at least more than 10 minutes. And it was really less than that. He came on in the 83rd against England. So 7 minutes plus stoppage time. Like, there's got to be an avenue in for more than that. So, look, I'm not going to go too crazy on this because we just, at this point, I just have to throw my hands up in the air and say, I don't know what's true. I'm not on the inside of any of this. At some point, I'm guessing we'll find out what is or isn't true. But right now, we don't know. So there's no sense in getting too worked up over it. But, I mean, if he's fully healthy, that's a thing for me that I'll hang on to with Berhalter, because I have defended him, and I defended him on this. But if Reyna was fully fit, and you could only get him on there for 7 minutes in two games, that one of them you desperately need a win, that's hard for me to stomach, man. Like, I don't know what to say about that.
Yeah, I don't know. I think we just parked this one, though, for now. We're going to have to let this play out.
You're right. I guess you're right. But it needed to be addressed.
No, it did.
Addressed.
It did.
What are some of the other issues we have here, JJ?
I mean, we just called this segment "We Have Issues." So, so the other one is we've got two flag-related issues. An Iranian state news website has called for the U.S. team to be thrown out of the World Cup by FIFA for distorting the Iranian flag in a social media post, and they quote some rules where that shall not be done. And then the U.S. Told CNN that they removed the central part of the Iranian flag for social media posts and then went back and replaced it, but it was going to be deliberate to show solidarity with those protesting in Iran. And this caused something of a firestorm. It's and the fact that it made CNN was kind of interesting. But now they've gone back and they've reverted to the correct in inverted commas, the Iranian flag as it was beforehand. So this was some kind of show of solidarity from US soccer with those protesting in Iran, which I was quite surprised by.
Yeah,
to be honest with you.
Like, I don't know, it all, I guess if the US is showing solidarity in that movement, maybe their heart was in the right place. The way that this went down feels a little bit clunky and mismanaged.
It does feel
to
clunky.
Me. The fact, you know, something like that, I know that soccer and politics are oftentimes inextricably linked, but like a move like that is deeply political, and to the point where the U.S. State Department felt the need to come out and release a statement on the incident and say that there was no coordination in this.
No.
They immediately removed themselves from U.S. soccer doing something like that. So like heart in the right place, okay, but still something about the method of sending that message felt a little bit off to me.
Well, it's amazing that a non-governmental organization would take it upon itself to... We know the situation between the United States and Iran and the fraught relationship they've had for nearly 50 years now. To get involved in this manner was... I thought it strange, you know? And I'm not saying that... They shouldn't have or should feel like they should never show any gesture of support to those protesting in Iran. But was there a better way they could have done it? I guess they probably felt not, considering the armband, the way the armband issue was shut down quickly by FIFA. There would be no in-game way to show support. So I guess this was their small gesture. But the fact that then immediately the U.S. government is distancing itself from that is... probably shows you that it was not properly executed. So it's just another, as if this game needed any more attention, both on and off the field. And the second flag issue, flag part two, we'll call it, Serbia are under investigation for a flag that was hung in their locker prior to the game versus Brazil, depicting Kosovo as a part of Serbia and the words "no surrender" on it. And we know how...
That feels inflammatory.
Oh, feels very inflammatory. It's a good job then that there won't be any people with links to Kosovo playing for Switzerland versus Serbia in the final group game then. Or there will.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you remember what happened with Jordan Shaqiri doing the Kosovar-Albanian eagle symbol, celebrating a goal. Or was it him, or was it...
Was it Granit Xhaka?
It was Granit Xhaka, I think. One or the other. During a game versus Serbia last at the last World Cup. So, you know, again, this is a pretty fraught situation. So, I mean, again, ramping up tension, further tension. And the dangerous nationalism coming into what essentially is a festival of not dangerous nationalism. Or at least that's how we like to portray the World Cup as.
Yeah, but nationalism is oftentimes on full display during events like this.
Yeah, and I've always liked to think that it's, if there is...
The good kind
of nationalism it is in the World Cup, but, you know, it's very hard. It's very hard to keep sport out of larger societal or geopolitical threads. Anyway, finally... oh, boy. Jurgen Klinsmann. Jurgen Klinsmann is under fire from lots of people. Iranian people, Iranian manager Carlos Queiroz, for his comments in his post-match analysis of Iran versus Wales for ITV. We're going to have a little listen to what Jurgen had to say about the culture of Iranian football.
They just stayed on the right side of the law. For the referee, in another game, they might not have done.
Yeah, that's their culture. That's their way of doing it. And that's why Carlos Queiroz, he fits really well there. Iranian national team, and that's he struggled in South America. He failed with Colombia to qualify, then he failed with Egypt to qualify as well, and then he went back right before the World Cup now and guided Iran, where he worked already for a long, long time. So this is not by coincidence. This is all purposely. This is just part of their culture. That's how they play it, and they work the referee. You saw the bench always jumping off, always working the fourth linesman and the fourth referee on the sideline.
Constantly
in their ears. They're constantly in your face on the field. I mean, Kiefer Moore probably will tell you lots of stories after this game today. He had a lot of little incidents that we did not even see out here. This is their culture, and they kind of make you lose your focus. They make you lose your concentration and what's really important to you. And then they take you,
off. The European ref would have been different.
Big difference with another referee, the Guatemalan referee, and I've worked with for the U.S. for 6 years. They went to Guatemala, Honduras, Costa Rica, and this fits their culture.
But it's the nature,
basically,
isn't it? You know,
yeah, they kind of work it out. They have five people around them. They talk it out.
Yeah.
So can I just tell you, I guess, where my head was at? Because I heard this.
Yeah, go ahead. I have a few points to be made about it too. So
I saw, before I had heard the comment, I saw that there was a controversy around it. So I then went and watched it a couple times. First I read it, then I went and watched what he said. And, like, I don't know, the way I heard it and sort of interpreted it was him referring to a footballing culture. Now, I don't know if that is in fact what everybody is up in arms over, or if more was being taken out of this and they took it to mean that Jurgen was referring almost to the culture of the people. If that is the case, then that is wrong. That is not how I myself heard it or what I took from it. I just took it to mean that, like, they play a certain way, which you can have a problem with that. To me, it's not an international incident saying something like that. I mean, look, like, it's not a whole lot different than some of the things that people say all the time about the way certain CONCACAF nations play, or the dark arts with Argentina or Atletico Madrid, or, you know, any number of teams.
Is this a cultural thing in Chelsea when John Terry used to surround the referee? Is it a West London cultural thing?
So, I don't know. If I had just heard it, I would not have given it, honestly, I would not have given it a second thought.
Just to cut across you, I would have, because first of all, let's start with the manager. I think he went in two-footed on Carlos Queiroz.
You know what? That is true. It felt, something felt personal between him and the Iranian manager.
And I tried to figure out what might that be. And I look at the plethora of jobs that Carlos Queiroz has got since he was a failed, not a good club manager. Very good club coach at United, as Alex Ferguson will attest, but didn't go well for him at Real Madrid. And then he's gone on this merry-go-round of some successful, some not-so-successful jobs as an international manager. Like, the opposite is for Jurgen Klinsmann. Jurgen Klinsmann hasn't had a job in football since the US, right?
I don't believe so. Yeah, I'd have to double check.
And whenever you hear of Jurgen Klinsmann potentially getting a job, he had that year. Oh my God, do you remember he had that brief period at Hertha Berlin?
Okay.
I remember that. I remember the reaction to that was just generally, oh my God, especially from the US and from Bayern Munich fans who remember Philipp Lahm saying the guy, he didn't do any tactics. He wasn't particularly good in that area. So I guess maybe he has an axe to grind with Carlos Queiroz. Now, Queiroz responded very strongly, invited him to come and watch Iran and see if it is indeed part of their culture.
But then also immediately called for his job with FIFA. He said, I expect you to resign immediately.
Do you not think that's a problem, though, that Jurgen Klinsmann is an analyst getting paid by ITV and also working on FIFA's technical committee for this World Cup? I think that's a conflict of interest.
Maybe. I had not given that much thought either.
Well, I don't think it's great. I think you got to do one or the other. So when I heard the comments, I thought, first of all, my first thought was everybody does this. I have a friend right now who's just got into football, and tonight he said, you know, sometimes I just hate the overselling, the dive, the flopping, the stuff like that. And he didn't say one culture over others. He didn't say I hate when the Germans do it. I hate when the Costa Ricans do it. He just noted from his brief football watching career that everybody does it. And that's the starting point. This is not unique to Iranian culture. I think everyone does it to some degree. And the other part to it for me was Jurgen Klinsmann. When he came to England, there was almost a moral panic before he joined Tottenham because of what was he going to bring? Diving. The man was synonymous with two things, goals and diving. And I'll tell you, in some circles, diving more than goals. Uh-huh. So much so that at Tottenham, and it's on his debut for Tottenham against Sheffield Wednesday, when he scored, what was the first thing he did? He did a flat-out dive. And it became known as the Klinsmann. It was his response to people who saw him diving. And if you watch his performance during Italia 90, I mean, disgrace is a strong word because lots of people do it. He couldn't stay off the floor. So that it was very strange and a lack of self-awareness from him to say that. But this came across my radar this evening. The New York Times World Cup briefing was sent to my inbox. Rory Smith. He starts out, Jurgen Klinsmann, of course, was wrong. The former United States manager was wrong when he suggested during Iran's victory against Wales that stretching rules and blurring boundaries was part of Iran's soccer culture. He was wrong when he implied that the Guatemalan referee had tolerated it because it was his culture too. Then he goes on to say he shouldn't have been surprised by the reaction from Iran or from Carlos Queiroz, and their response was very strong, suggesting, you know, German soccer culture should not be judged by the 82 World Cup match known as the Shame of Heehan or Klinsmann's own aforementioned dramatic dives. And then Rory gets to the crux of it. The only problem is that if we're all completely honest, Klinsmann was right. Pushing the limits is part of Iranian soccer culture. It's part of Guatemalan soccer culture and German soccer culture and South American soccer culture and everyone else's soccer culture, including the English, who really don't like it if you point that out. It might be called different things in different places, but being streetwise or indulging in gamesmanship in English, its meaning is the same wherever. He says, you know, Picardia in South America, Forbizia in Italian. It's all the same. And in some ways, it's not a slur. If anything, it's said with a furtive admiration. I don't think Jurgen Klinsmann's barbs about soccer culture were meant necessarily at Iran, although he should be at pains to point out that everybody does this. And he should have admitted, I've done it. I thought the nastiness was towards Kiraz. For some reason, that I don't know why.
Yeah, your theory could be correct. Why is this guy getting chances and I'm not?
Nobody has the moral high ground on this. You go to the park to play pickup tomorrow, there'll be someone who goes over, who cheats, who fouls, who wastes time, who does all those things. I know I've done it myself. It's prevalent in every single soccer culture. And to say it was Iranian culture was probably incorrect, but also correct. It's part of their culture too. Everyone does it. And
this might just be one of those situations where those within Iranian football just have no use for the particular messenger here. The message he might have been sending may not be wrong, but they don't need to hear it from him.
But it was also unfair to Iranian players and the Iranian team in one crucial way in particular. They were better than Wales. This is not how they won the match. You go back and watch that game. They were the better team, albeit they scored two goals very, very late. They were the better side. They had the better attacking opportunities. And I think it was disrespectful to focus on the quote-unquote culture, which we all share, rather than their play. And the way he said it was condescending as well. It did sound condescending.
A little bit, sure. There you go. What a pod. Before we get out, did want to mention props to all of you out there on Black Friday who took in the U.S. and England match. You were part of history. Now, there are different metrics by which these are the statistics are measured for viewing, for the TV rating. But by the one that I guess Fox was using that was the most watched, most watched men's game of all time? Or was it? I'd have to look at the exact phrasing of it. The different metrics come down to the one where the entire broadcast period, which goes through the pregame show, through the game, through the postgame, or the metric of just measuring the in-game viewing. Across the entirety of this broadcast, pregame all the way through, I believe the number was the highest we had ever seen. Timothy Burke posted this on Twitter. He said, England-USA on Friday had more U.S. viewers than all but one World Series game over the past 5 years. 2019 Game 7 had more, despite it kicking off in the morning in half the country. This sport, people care. People care deeply. We know it. We've known it for years. And I'm guessing that this is a TV rating that will be bested by some other soccer event in either later this tournament, hopefully, or certainly in the years to come. So good job, everyone.
Oh, yeah. And it's the most watched men's soccer match on U.S. English television ever. So that's the way it was qualified. The previous was the high set by the 94 World Cup final between Italy and Brazil. Yeah. And, this is a rare win for Fox in a tournament where certainly in the online community, their coverage has been getting absolutely battered. So,
in some ways, yeah, it has. I will say when I saw that, I knew that game was going to, when we saw that was England-USA World Cup Black Friday, like all the ingredients were there for that to be just a massive TV event. It wasn't a bad game necessarily. Like the U.S. got a point out of it.
Oh, but it was a lot of kickback from people who don't regularly watch soccer, saying it was a wasted opportunity. How can people watch this?
Well, that stuff is nonsense, and I got no use for that. But I will say, it would have been cool had something awesome happened with the game being on that kind of stage. It would have. It just would have.
I mean,
that's okay for
us
soccer fans to admit that. Like, it would have. Right. But we still got a point, and hopefully it creates an opportunity for more awesome things to happen later on in this tournament when even more eyeballs hopefully will be on what the U.S. are doing. So I'm good with it. But all the stuff about non-soccer fans taking to Twitter and just
How do you watch this?
I don't know.
Do you watch a pitcher scratching his balls for an hour and a half, for it seems an eternity, before he throws a ball into the dirt at 0-0 in extra innings in July in 95 degrees? How do you do that?
Every sport is deeply flawed. I don't understand why soccer is the one where people feel the need to just call out its flaws. It's always been that way. I don't know if this regular mainstream sports establishment feels threatened by soccer. If there's I don't know.
They fear what they don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure there's some of that. I just don't get it. I've never understood. If you don't like it, I disagree with you, fine, but you're entitled to not like it. But this need to let everyone know how much you don't like it. Why? There's plenty of sports out there that I've got no use for. Why would I tell everyone that? Who cares?
Let's
I just don't get that. But I don't want to get worked up over it because that's so it's so dumb to me.
It's dumb. We just need to tell people where they need to go to get us next, Andrew, and then we need to get out of here.
So the next time you'll be hearing our voices on this podcast, JJ, we will either be utterly devastated or we will be to the moon. We will be joining you sometime after the United States versus Iran match on Tuesday goes final. And that podcast will be one for the ages one way or another. So you will not want to miss that. Like I said, look for that one Tuesday evening, Tuesday night, sometime around there. We'll get it to you as quickly as we can, but we also have jobs and such. And so we'll get that one out as fast as possible. But yeah, that one, no matter what happens, that will be a big one. So make sure you're refreshing your feeds because that, we're a couple days out and I'm already nervous for it. But I feel good, though. I feel like this team, you know, not maybe over the course of a full 90, but coming out of that England game, I feel like this U.S. team is maybe starting to click in the right ways. It just needs to translate to goals. Nil-nil won't do it. There's got to be goals in this one. And you know, hopefully, as an American fan, boy, I hope we see that because they need it now more than ever.
And that'll be a YouTube live stream, correct, Andrew?
Oh, that I was aware of.
Oh, wait, hang on. Let me check my notes. I'm checking the rundown that you made.
Yeah, I sent you a calendar before the tournament.
It's a podcast reaction special. So, yeah.
The reason I couldn't commit to the YouTube live stream, JJ, is just because we don't know the exact time yet that we'll be doing that.
Okay.
And that, of course, is important when promoting live streams.
That's a good thing. But we do have a live stream set up for Friday.
Oh,
December 2nd.
Well, we'll have to. Let me look at the calendar because we're getting to a point now where maybe there can be revisions. We'll go through it. We'll give it a look. We'll see what we got.
But refresh the feeds, like, subscribe. That's the best way to know what we're up to. And we've been pretty busy. And now we got to get out. This is too long.
I know. I have Eagles Packers coming up in 20 minutes. Sports, no. JJ. Sports. It never stops. I'm excited for this.
How could you watch a game
so soccer centric that like I haven't thought much about anything else? But I am now seeing that it's now 8:05. I'm getting ready for this.
All right, you go do it, and let's get everybody this podcast out.
All right, this was great fun.
This is
I hope
one.
The tournament goes on forever. JJ, to you I say.
Check you later, phone boy.
I'll see you, man.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.